Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Let's Hang Out. I'm Ellie Brigida.
And I'm Lee Holmes Foster, and here's what's happening this week.
This week in the Lesdom.
This Week in the Lesdom is a place where we can touch base each episode about things going on with the podcast or otherwise. And we want to remind you of our Season 5 Patreon campaign, which you can join at bit.ly/lespatreon. Once we get to 150 patrons, we will start releasing bonus episodes for all of you. There are also a bunch of really fun things in between. We're going to try to be doing a virtual house party for all of our patrons where you can hang out in Zoom with us. We did this for my birthday party and it was really fun, where we had like a room where you could play drinking games, a room where you could play Jackbox games,
a room
where you could just hang out and chat. So it did actually feel like you were at like a real house party where you could go into wherever you want.
You all don't want to miss Zoom Flip Cup. It's an experience.
It is. It's wonderful.
Speaking of an experience, we're also going to have another great experience coming up, which is the opportunity to watch us and Bad Queers break down Rent live on Zoom. It's going to be incredible. We're so excited. We can't wait. If you heard our episode with Bad Queers, you know that we talked about musicals and whether you're a bad queer if you do or don't like musicals. So we're gonna dive into, you know, some deep feelings on how we all feel about Rent, the movie at least. We're going to be watching the movie, okay?
Can't wait. If you want to see us live, minusly, very, very sad, you can see the last
tier.
You can see parts of the Let's Hang Out team in the flame at Glexicon. That's October 8th through the 10th in Vegas. We are so excited to meet some of you there.
We also are going to have so much fun trivia coming up. So again, we're going to be doing spooky queer trivia for Halloween. So coming up on October 26th and October 30th, we're going to have all sorts of questions from some of our favorite spooky and horror movies. We're very excited. And tell us about our next trivia event after that, Ellie.
I'm so excited. So we're going to be hosting Orphan Black Trivia with Realm. Realm are the producers of the Orphan Black podcast with Tatiana Maslany, which is so cool. Tatiana will not be joining us for trivia, unfortunately. However, we'll be there for trivia.
She'll be there in our hearts.
She'll be there in our hearts. She'll be there all over the PowerPoint. And we're going to be doing that on November 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We cannot wait. In the greater Les universe, can I talk about this?
I feel like really we're about to have a mini episode.
It really got me fired up. We are going to talk for a while about this. So in the greater Les universe, we heard recently that Raven Simone turned down Raven Baxter being a lesbian in Raven's Home. So Raven's Home is the reboot of That's So Raven. It is very, very gay. Even if Raven Simone thinks that Raven Baxter is not gay, we'll get into that. But here's what she said, and I'll just let her quote speak. Raven said, "You know what? There was a conversation before the series started, and I was asked the question, would you like Raven Baxter to be a lesbian? And I said no," Raven revealed. "The reason I said no wasn't because I wasn't proud of who I was or I didn't want to represent the LGBTQ+ community in any way. It was because Raven Baxter is Raven Baxter is Raven Baxter. There was no reason for me to change the human that she was in order to fit the actress that played her. And Raven Baxter is a character that I was proud to play. Even if she is straight, cisgender, I don't mind. Let her have her moment."
Thoughts, incorrect. Incorrect. Listen, we totally should have just done an episode about this. We might still.
We might. Whenever we do Raven's Home, should have been gay. We will have a whole.
So let me very concisely say my feelings about this, as short in as short an amount of time as I can, which is, it would have been super meaningful for many people of like our generation to have seen Raven grown up and coming out. That's a big deal. That's like a touch point that people can relate to. And also it is really important to have QPOC people on our screens. And this would have been a great opportunity to have that played by a QPOC actress. That's it. That's my thoughts.
My final thought is Raven Baxter is Raven Baxter is Raven Baxter is Raven Baxter was straight when she was in high school. It's like years sure. later. Like you can, people can evolve and change, and like it wouldn't have been a disservice to the character of Raven Baxter to make her gay. She already is.
It's not only would it not have she is gay. Not only would it not have been a disservice to Raven Baxter the character, it is a disservice to people, to anyone who comes out later in life, to pretend like that is not a thing that can happen. Yes. And that's an incredibly like subtle but harmful thing that's happening in that quote. So that's yes. all. We'll leave it at that.
I'm like, sorry, I just want to say one thing. I will also say that I do understand what she is saying of like, as an actor, she doesn't have to, all of her characters don't have to be gay because she is gay. But I do feel like it was such a great opportunity for her to say like, okay, she doesn't have to be, but if she can, that's cool. That's all. All right, our next thing. Here we go.
I'm keeping all my thoughts inside.
Have
that's
you seen
all
this
doing.
Music video? So
I haven't yet. I've seen some of the screenshots from it, though.
Muna and Phoebe Bridgers recreated But I'm a Cheerleader in their new music video for Silk Chiffon, which is one of their new singles. If you haven't seen it, watch it. Also, watch as many videos as you can of Muna live because, holy crap, it's a good show. I love this music video. It's like, it does such a perfect job, in my opinion, of like paying tribute to the movie and just like being a bop. It's very good.
I'm going to check it out. I'll check it out as soon as we're off tonight because I've seen people posting about it all day and I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it's so good.
Amazing. That's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee, and welcome to our 68th installment of Should've Been Gay.
It was fun, it was great, but it should've been a little more gay.
And in this week's episode, women are fair game.
Women are fair game. And
women
are
fair game.
We are so excited to be talking about Gunpowder Milkshake today with Charlie Jane Anders. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. This is so awesome. I love your podcast. It's so great to be here.
We're really excited to have you. For those of you listening, Charlie Jane Anders is the author of Victories Greater Than Death, the first book in a new young adult trilogy, along with the forthcoming short story collection, Even Greater Mistakes. She's also the author of Never Say You Can't Survive, a book about how to use creative writing to get through hard times. I love that. Have you been using creative writing to get through these hard times, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, every single thing in the book is me practicing what I preach. And in fact, I wrote that book throughout 2020, which was a time when I definitely needed a lot of, I needed a lot of help from my imagination and through like my kind of storytelling brain to just keep myself in one piece during like a really, really rough year, really. And this year has been also really rough, I got to be honest. So, those essays are kind of me reminding myself as much as anybody else of like how you can kind of get into your own imaginary world and use it to kind of survive really tough stuff, really scary stuff in the real world.
I love that. And I know a lot of our listeners can really identify with that, I am sure. And I love, the idea of using your creativity to get through it all. We are here for that as well. With, creating an entire musical during a pandemic.
Right. I'm excited about the musical. I listened to the episode where you introduced it, but I haven't actually listened to the musical yet.
You're in for a ride.
Exciting.
Yeah, we've found keeping busy helps us, I think.
For sure.
Get through all the times, right?
For sure.
Yes. But we are here to talk about some other creative writing, I guess. Good segue, Ellie.
I was gonna say some other ways to get through hard times, like killing everyone. We each have our segues, Ellie,
I like yours better. But do you want to do our IMDb synopsis, Lee? I'm really excited for this one.
I do, because I already have so many questions. So for anyone who hasn't yet watched Gunpowder Milkshake, it's on Netflix. Here is the IMDb synopsis. Three generations of women fight back against those who could take everything from them.
Hmm.
Question mark?
What are your questions?
My question is, who are the three generations supposed to be? Are the aunts counting as one generation?
No, I
and
think
then they're considering the rest of them, or is
Emily
the last
is definitely
generation?
The third generation?
I think the little girl is the new generation, the next generation.
Okay.
Kind of.
I just feel like this, they're like, it's a lot of lumping. It's a lot of lumping. There's some lumping women together that's happening for me in this IMDb synopsis.
And yet not enough women together in this actual film.
Wow, you nailed it. Nailed it, Ellie.
You are welcome for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I have some thoughts on the synopsis and on the movie, but we'll get into those first. Let's all do our gay synopsis. So who should start? Charlie, do you have a gay synopsis ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, basically there is a secret society of hot older ladies who live in a library, which is the greatest thing ever. And that's where they live, I guess. They spend all their time there, except for when they go to a diner where there's like magical milkshakes that keep you from killing people most of the time. And so these ladies have this awesome library society and they're clearly shacking up together, but all they want to do is help Karen Gillan kill a bunch of dudes for reasons.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. The all-important reasons.
Four reasons. All right, here is mine. It's short and sweet. So, and forget about the third generation of women in this, right? Not the youngest generation. Three generations of queer women take down the patriarchy and go down on each other.
That's the movie I wish I'd watched, for sure.
Right? Right? That's,
okay,
yeah, that's that for me.
I think I went to like a slightly more critical, depressing place in my gay synopsis this time, Ellie. I'm not sure what that says about this, but my gay synopsis for this movie, I think, is not even in a world that seems to contain only bisexual lighting and polyamory, are we safe from Bury Your Gays?
Yeah.
Point.
That's yeah. Going to be my synopsis.
I mean, you really... You buried the lead there. I mean, you spoiled the entire ending at the beginning.
I'm so sorry.
But
go watch the movie. I have nothing to say for myself.
I do agree. I mean, yeah, we should definitely talk about the Bury Your Gays. But so let's talk. What was our experience with this film? Charlie, you had some thoughts before we logged on. So what was your experience with Gunpowder Milkshake?
You know, I feel like there's almost two movies there. There's like... the movie that just wants to be kind of like an homage to like Zack Snyder and, you know, Guy Ritchie and other random action directors of like the last 20 years. And it's just kind of serving up, you know, kind of lukewarm action movie beats in like a very kind of, you know, here, we put these in the microwave for 15 seconds, hope you like it kind of thing.
With women. We just sprinkled some women on top.
Right. And then there's the other movie, which is a movie about like the secret society of ladies living in a library and having guns hidden inside books. I have so many questions about that. Do all the books
yes.
have guns in them? Do some of the books just have like books? Like at one point she hands her a book that's just for reading. So I don't know. But anyway, so they live in a gun library, which I think is kind of fun. And like there's all this stuff that we just kind of glimpse that's so interesting and cool and awesome that we never get to see because we have to spend most of our time, you know, with... you know, watching Karen Gillan fight random dudes and be chased by, and having random dudes sit around talking about how they're going to kill Karen Gillan. And like, it's like, no, just more of the ladies in the library, please. Just explain that to us.
Please and thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
For sure. Gosh.
Just a whole movie about the aunts. That's all we need.
Yeah,
for sure.
I do feel like that's a huge reason why we have to have the shit a bit gay, right? Like, that was the biggest missed opportunity in this entire movie. Of like, okay, so you have all these hot women in suits who clearly have slept together and are like, yeah, like are madly in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we just get like a handhold between them and we only get like one fight scene with them. Like we know nothing about them besides like they raise this girl and probably like anime and Scarlet had a thing, but like you'd blink and miss it.
I mean, there's
right?
like
they
at
all
one
had,
point,
they all had
like
thing.
You know, Michelle Yeoh kisses Carla Gugino on the cheek, and it's just this like Oh, okay, wait. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It was like Lucy and the football.
Exactly.
That's why I'm saying this is, it's funny, we're recording this like right after, I think yesterday for Autostraddle, Drew Gregory wrote a great article about like, as can queer creators like kill queer characters in the stuff that they're creating? And like, what an important question and discussion. And like, obviously the answer is yes, but then you look at this movie and you're like, and this is why dudes shouldn't. This is why what I'm assuming are two straight dudes who wrote this movie shouldn't do this, because you wrote like very obviously gay characters and then gave us no information on them, none of their stories, no characters, no nothing, and then kill one of them for no purpose other than to, I guess, further the plot, maybe? But, this is just, like, heavy-handed bury your gaze. This is all it is. I'm like, there's not much else going on. We can get into the argument of, like, is it canon gay and therefore does it? This is bury your gaze. Come on.
I agree.
Textbook example of barrier gaze.
I'm sorry, when you were talking about the writers, I was like, wait, let me see who the writers are. Like, what do they look like? They look at like two of the men trying to kill her. Like, they they like are bald, have huge beards. I'm like, what?
It's for sure two dudes, and I don't know anything about them as writers or anything about their lives, but I'm projecting onto the universe these are two straight dudes. I refuse to believe otherwise.
It hurts me so badly to see their faces, actually. Like, it actually is giving my heart palpitations.
What makes me sad?
It's a lot, and that's because here's the thing. I want to believe. I mean, again, I know nothing about these men. I'm sorry, men. No, I'm not. But I know nothing about these men. I want to believe in my heart of hearts that they sat down and said, we're going to write a cool kick-ass women's action film, and we're gonna have women, and they're gonna have guns, and they're gonna like take down a whole army with just them, and she's gonna do all these cool fights, and it's gonna be awesome, she's such a cool assassin. But instead, what happened is I feel like they wrote a whole movie of like, let's write a movie where men ruin women's lives repeatedly and endlessly and violently. And I'm like, well, you did do a great job writing that movie. Yes. A+ work, boys. Like, that's what we got. Yay, I guess.
What makes me sad is that I feel like there's been kind of only recently have we gotten to have like action movies where there's more than one woman in it. Like, it used to be that like, even if the woman was the ostensible lead, there would only be one woman in the movie. There'd be like the first Wonder Woman movie is a great example of that. There are a bunch of others which came out in the last like 10, 15 years where it's like one awesome kick-ass lady and a bunch of dudes. And like all her friends are dudes. All her, like, the Old Guard comes to mind as an example of that. Like, you know, there's basically like Charlize Theron and then all her dude friends. And then I guess there's one lady who joins them who is like, who Charlize Theron does not hook up with, or maybe she does. I can't remember actually now.
I don't think she does, because she had that whole love story. Like, she's
right,
like
she
tortured
does.
And in love. Like, she literally, I don't think she hooks up with anyone in the film because she's still in love with this woman from like 500 years ago.
Right. That's right. It's coming
very
back to me. But there's this trend of like, you know, until recently, like, you could have one lady in an action movie and then everybody else is just kind of, you know, it's all dudes, all cis dudes. And like, I feel like now we started getting these more action movies where there's like a group of kick-ass ladies teaming up. Like, you know, Harley Quinn comes to mind, Widows. There's been a bunch of them in the last couple of years. But Charlie's Angels. Well, yeah, I actually really liked the Charlie's Angels reboot with Kristen Stewart. I thought that was actually pretty good. And, you know, Kristen Stewart definitely brought some queerness to it. But in general, you don't get to see the kick-ass ladies having like much in the way of relationships, and definitely not much in the way of romance. Like, they just, all they could do is kind of pout at the camera, and then, you know, often random dudes who are on the sidelines get more development than the ostensible leads of the film, which, you know.
To be fair, no one in this movie got any development. there was very little of it to go around. So I don't think that it doesn't feel like they did a ton of, like, developing the men over anyone else. It just feels like none of the characters were super fleshed out. You know, at least for me, the reason I feel so like cheated by that is I'm like, they're so obviously all gay. So yeah. can we talk a little bit about how gay everyone is? I don't know who we want to start with, or if you had anyone specific, Charlie, that you wanted to dive into first, because I feel like we're going to have some thoughts.
I mean, Angela Bassett, for sure, like Anna May, her outfits are amazing in this movie. And she's just like, she's got such a powerful kind of like alpha dyke vibe in that film.
Oh, that God, yes.
It was very disappointing that, you know, like, again, any kind of relationship developing, even if it wasn't like overtly romantic, would have been really welcomed. I do have to push back slightly on what you said a moment ago. I feel like the movie kind of like in its heart really cared about Paul Giamatti. Like Paul Giamatti,
is that,
like
wait,
really
is that,
kinda,
is that
like,
Nathan?
That's Nathan.
Yeah, Nathan. Yeah. It was like the movie really thought that Nathan was a super fascinating character who we should like, you know, his struggles with like how he's gonna like how he has to throw Karen Gillan under the bus. I felt like he got like in some ways, I don't know, but I agree that nobody really
got
much involved
in that
film.
I mean, he
did,
but you still don't know why. Who is he? What is his story? What is the firm? What does he do? How did he end up with being such an important part of Scarlett's life that she, like, left her daughter with him? Like, you still don't get any of the who are you and why do you matter in this story kind of development.
Points.
Like, no one gets that, you know? So
points.
I agree. I mean, I think in terms of characters who have any real weight in the story, he certainly gets a decent amount for playing like a pretty minimal role, but I still don't feel like I know anything about him, you know, or why he cares about her, or how he like there's so many unanswered questions.
I think too, yeah. I'm sure Charlie, you probably have lots of thoughts about like the world building in this as an author yourself.
Yeah,
like the world building is very like they just tried to build too many things that like they didn't get deep enough on because they just spent it on action sequences, right? Like, why can't you use a gun in the diner? What's the relevance?
Until you can,
yeah. Until they all show up with their guns and none of the army of thugs notices them. It's
it's a little weak.
Clunky.
We know this.
I'm gonna give it a clunky at best.
But back to the gay. So
back to Anna May's like excellent suit and vest combo. Like, yeah, we could just
talk
about that for a while.
I mean, should we just talk
Everybody's
about the outfits?
Crazy for a sharp dressed lady, you know? Oh my God. That was the, you know, the fashions in this movie were generally pretty great. I got to say, whoever was the costume designer was on point.
And the sets
were just gorgeous. Like there were some gorgeous sets, like the library sets. And like when they go into the other parts of the library and suddenly there's like dioramas, there's like, oh, here's the undersea diorama. Here's the like weird forest diorama. It's like, oh yeah, of course, their library /
museum.
Armory. Is also has dioramas because why wouldn't you in, you know, a gun library?
Yeah.
You know, I felt like a lot of stuff in this movie was really kind of motivated by what would look cool. But, you know,
that's another good point of something I will give them credit for because what you were just talking about before, Charlie, about like what we tend to get in a lot of the like female fronted action films. I will say we did not have a whole troop of like scantily clad, like boobs hanging out, jumping around in a little Speedo, killing men. Like they're in reasonable like pants, suit vests. I'm into it. I'm into the bowling jacket. Like, you know, they all look like the kind of women that I'm like, sure, I could believe you convincingly like run around and, you know, just massacre scores of men in that outfit. Why not? Yeah, you got, you know, perfectly serviceable shoes and like you're not running around in high heels and a thong like doing this. So A+ yes to the costume team, but also they're so gay. They're all in button downs, they're all in vests, she's in her little blazer. I'm so here for it. Like even Carla Gugino's character Madeline, you know, she's got the cute little sweater.
She's so cottagecore.
So adorable.
She's so cottagecore, but even she's in pants, you know, like they're all in practical practical clothing. So good for them. I will give them that, because I did enjoy seeing women where I'm like, yeah, that those are your, you know, sure, you're all lesbians and that's what you wear to run your little murder library. I buy it.
I want to talk a little bit about the backstory that we didn't get, but that I feel like we all can assume, and I know they wanted to imply, but I, coming from a should have been gay perspective, I'm like, okay, you wanted to imply it, but like straight people would not get it. So like if straight people won't get it, it's not gay enough. That's my like main thing.
Yeah.
But the backstory that they clearly were trying to do, right, is like when Scarlett comes back, also shout out to Lena Headey because, you know, we love her because Imagine Me and You and just everything. Also, has anyone seen Twist? It's a very new movie, but she plays Bill Sykes in like an Oliver. It's like a twist on Oliver Twist. And she is Bill Sykes.
Oh. Interesting.
And she is also with Nancy. So like she's gay in it. It was interesting.
Amazing.
We could talk about it another time. Sorry.
I want to see that.
But I've seen so many. I'm happy that Game of Thrones is over because now, like, she can do all of these things, right? Like, we're going to see her so much more on our screens, and it makes me really happy. Sorry, that was a side. But clearly the backstory, because Anna May was the most pissed out of everyone that she left, right? Like,
right.
Most pissed. She's the one who, like, takes, like, the front line when Scarlett comes into that library and she's like, you left us, but, like, you left me is, like, the heavily implied gayness that we see there. And then, like, the other two, Florence and Madeline, are clearly also together. But, Lee, you think it's a poly situation?
Well, okay, here's the thing. I am so fascinated by, this is why I wish they had just made the whole movie nothing but this, because I'm like, I want the backstory, I want the dynamics, I want more of their interactions, because I agree there is clearly something between Florence and Madeline, like for sure, 100%. There is also clearly something between Anna May and Scarlett, but at the same time, when they do that little, you know, like a flying duck V with Anna May at the front to have that conversation with Scarlett, the first person that Scarlett talks to is she says that she has this little moment and she goes, hi, Madeline. And Madeline goes, hi, Scarlett. And they like share a very pointed look there, right? Like something is happening. And then there's also the moment where Florence like has to calm Anna May down and they're like having that whole moment of like, she's like miming, like breathing to her and they're sharing this moment. So like, I want to know, I just want a whole movie about their relationship because I have to imagine there was some sort of like, either like poly quad that was like based around like two primary couples that were all sort of also together, or like, or I don't know what, or they had like a throuple originally that like Scarlett was then like joined into somehow and then like dropped. I don't know, but I want to know. That's the whole point. There's more going on than just Florence and Madeline and Scarlett and Anna May. That's all I'm saying.
And it really feels like they were co-parenting, like the Karen Gillan character, I don't remember the names of any characters, I'm sorry, but they were co-parenting her. They all act like Sam is their collective daughter, and like they're all kind of her parent figures. And like, you know, I kind of just picture the four of the older ladies just being kind of like some kind of group marriage / poly. You might be right, it's two couples who kind of like sometimes cross over between each other, but
there was some sort of overlap, some level of overlap. It's unclear what.
But it makes you wonder because, like, why would, you know, Scarlett leave Sam with, like, Nathan when, you know, the other three moms were right there? Like, she has three other moms who could have totally taken care of her.
And she has three other moms who are, like, murder machines,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's the other thing that I don't understand about the whole plot in a general sense, is it's like, I couldn't leave you with the aunts at the murder library. It wasn't safe. And I'm like, you had, like, some ragtag team of random Russians that was mad at you, and instead, now you have, like, this entire army from some other secret organization that we never know the name of or what they do.
Oh, the McAllister people or whatever.
Yeah, they don't even have a name. Like, we don't even know who they are. We just know they sound like they're supposed to be scarier than whoever was after you 15 years ago. And now you're just like, cool, we're going to wipe the floor with them because we are unstoppable murder women who nobody can touch and like no dude can ever like lay a finger on us, and so it wasn't safe then, but this is fine, we're just gonna like waltz in with no plan and 80 dudes after us. The whole thing feels a little stretched for me. So
I understand what you're saying, however I think you could also think about it like she didn't want to leave her with the moms because she loved them so much. And she was like, it's not safe in the way that, like, she knew that Nathan was more part of the people who were hunting her. And if she left her daughter with the moms at the library, they would also be in danger. So maybe her thought was like, let me save my lover and my child. I don't know.
It feels like a little bit of a stretch. Any way we're going to paint it, I think my response is going to be, was it though?
You're right. So we just cut Nathan out completely.
I agree with Lee. I'm just like, the more I think about it, the more that bugs me, because it's like, especially if Scarlett didn't want Sam to follow in her footsteps and work for the firm, which, by the way, is reminding me of like a terrible like early 90s workout video that my ex used to watch all the time. if Scarlett really didn't want, Sam to work with the firm, why hand her daughter over to the guy who's in charge of like recruiting for the firm instead of these other ladies? And this actually brings me to other questions that are now bugging me. Like, what do Anime and the others do for money? How do they afford this giant building with all this incredible stuff? And like,
like they sell people guns, right?
But they actually are super when Sam shows up and says, I want to get some guns. They act all like, no, we don't sell guns. No.
Well, they act like they don't sell guns to people they don't know already, like that don't come with a referral or that they don't have like a prior relationship with. But also, how do you not recognize, like, how do you have a random unattached like murder woman with red hair walk in and like not a single one of you is like, oh, are you our daughter?
But Lee, they couldn't see her hair, the hat.
So it was true, the hat. She didn't have the hat.
Mm. It was the hat.
Silly me for getting the hat. I'm sorry, while we dig in on this hat, can we talk about Sam a little bit? Because the obvious gay, right? Like, the obvious gay are the aunts and Scarlett and whatever is happening between the four of them. Like, we all see it, ladies. There's something going on. But I want to talk about Sam and how clearly, like, the very opening sequence of this movie is they just insane. I swear they don't know that lights that are not blue and pink exist to light a scene. Every scene with her, the diner starts out with bisexual lighting. The bowling alley, all bisexual lighting. Like, she is constantly backlit in blue and pink this entire movie. And I'm like, it's the year of our Lord 2021. No one is making that choice without knowing what they're doing. Come on.
I'm ashamed to admit I hadn't really thought about it like that, but you're totally right. Gosh, she's just like a bisexual light follows her wherever she goes. She's just she's got a halo, a bi halo.
A bisexual halo. That's it. And the whole movie, like, I mean, name a man that she talks to in the movie that she doesn't kill. It's just, it's like, come on. There's some things happening in this movie. Like, she's an independent woman who doesn't need a man and has nothing but bisexual lights following her around and is just like, I'm just gonna casually tase this guy in the balls. That sounds like fun. Like, I don't think Sam is the straightest character I've ever seen in my life. Let's put it that way. Oh, and then that comment of women are fair game. Come on.
I did love that quote.
She has an I Heart Kittens bag. Like, come on.
I feel like I wrote other gay things, but I can't remember.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
It was more about when Scarlett's talking about anime. Sorry, I'm like just like quotes. When Scarlett is talking about anime in the like flat, she specifically calls out anime before the others. She says, I knew anime and the others from work. Like, the first person she talks about is anime. And then she says, she and the others took us in, best years of my life. So I still can't get over, like, they completely missed out on telling that's, like, why didn't they just start with that story? Like, that should have been the first film that they made. I want a prequel, but also, like, why didn't you just start there?
Yeah, and then you could get emotionally invested in Madeline before they just kill her for no reason.
Literally no reason.
Literally none. And also, it's frustrating. I'm super frustrated by the fact that they also had her die from just, like, one random dude. Like, everyone else in this movie is like, oh, six guys coming at me with guns? NBD, I have chains. And then she's like, I have a literal, like, mounted machine gun, but one guy's gonna get a lucky shot in. And you're just like, I hate this. I hate it. It just felt, everything about it felt heavy-handed.
What are your thoughts on the barrier gaze in this, Charlie?
I mean, I feel like they wanted to kill someone in that giant climactic scene to sort of, the usual reason you kill like a character we care about is just to be like, now it's really, you know, this proves that there's real stakes or whatever, or, you know, and it just, it felt very, I don't know, it felt very unearned, and also like we didn't get to know that character well enough for her death to have an impact. And you know, it felt like maybe because she was the femmiest of them. She was the femmiest. She had that kind of like, you know, cottagecore outfit or whatever you all were saying. And so she was the one who had to die because everybody else is a little bit more butch, I guess. I don't know. It felt very...
The audacity of those writers.
I was not pleased. I was not pleased at all. I was like, come on. Like, you know... This is a fantasy world. She could easily survive, like, whatever. Like, even though she was, I mean, I felt like she was shot in the heart and then kept fighting for another 20 minutes.
Yes.
So that is impressive. It's impressive to be shot actually through the heart and then fight for another, like, 15, 20 minutes. That's, you know, you got to hand it to her. But I definitely felt like, you know, after that kiss between her and the Michelle Yeoh character, I was really kind of hoping that this was going somewhere. And then it just felt like, she dies, they kind of like have a very quickie rushed funeral for her, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's, you know, whatever, now we got to go get the little girl.
Well, and it's, the thing is, it's pointless, and that's the other, that's the biggest thing that I hate in a barrier gaze, is like, if it's a barrier gaze and there's not even a reason for it, like, it feels like they were trying to lean too hard into, oh, she got shot and that's how he managed to grab Emily. Like, there are a million other ways that you could have had him get the girl, right? Like, he could have gotten Emily any number of ways. You just have her like, oh, I sent her to carry this to the car and he was hiding on the side of the car and he just grabbed her and ran. And like, that's good enough. You don't have to kill her for Emily to get kidnapped in that scene. There's no need for it, and it changes
nothing
else. They don't even linger on it. They're just like, oh, she's just gonna cradle her body in the back of the truck and then they bury her, and then I guess they're gonna go fight the same guys that they were already fighting. That's it.
Even if like Florence got like far more enraged and was like going on a revenge spree even, but it's like,
right, yes, okay. Have it trigger something. It did nothing to further the plot. It was completely unnecessary.
Yeah, and I think too, I feel like people care about the death more just because it's Carla Gugino. Like, you just, like, the second you saw her, you're like, oh my god, love her so much. But like, they did nothing for her character development. Like,
no.
I cry at everything. Lee knows this. Every person who's ever heard this podcast knows. I did not.
Oh my god, did you not cry when she died?
I did not cry when she died.
I swear to God, it was like a
small, like, I felt like a little feeling behind my eyes, and I was like, what is this? And nothing came out.
Aww.
I know. And like,
that is
I kind of love it though, because wow, you do cry at everything. And what does that tell you about how little we knew about Madeline's character? That it not even that, not even that could do
well,
it.
Well, I thought, so I had, Twitter always ruins everything, but it's fine. Like, one of the reasons we wanted to do this is because Twitter is talking all about this film. But, like, somebody said something about Bury Your Gaze, but I didn't. I saw it, and then I was like, oh, God, I don't want to see it. So I knew somebody was going to die, but I didn't know who. And I feel like they should have killed Scarlett if they were going to kill anyone.
Yeah.
Because, like...
Yeah, that's fair. She's the one who has to atone for whatever the heck she has to atone for.
Yeah, I mean, it still makes no sense, but... Like, oh, someone's going to die. I was like, oh, the mom's going to die because she just finally got reunited with her daughter. And, like, they finally have a relationship. And then she dies. And her daughter's like, oh, I love you, mom. And blah, blah. Like, that would have been a little more emotionally interesting. Mm-hmm. Not that I want her to die at all. But
it would have felt
just
like
made
it
no sense.
Actually did something for the story. Like, you know, especially if Scarlett gets to die saving her daughter or atoning or, you know, fixing her mistakes or something. That's something.
Yeah, like I thought in the big battle there was going to be a moment where Sam almost dies and then Scarlett like, no, my baby! And then she's dead. But no. Just this...
Yeah.
But no.
Just this machine gun wasn't enough for one man.
Hey, to be fair, he was, you know, on the other side of a wall. So, I mean, foolproof plan. What was she supposed to do?
Also, like, yeah, I do not believe...
It was disappointing.
I do not believe for a second that Madeline is that much of an idiot to keep shooting the machine gun when she doesn't even see the whites of his eyes.
Yes, no, absolutely not.
Do you know what I mean?
That,
like, she was shooting a machine gun into empty air.
Yeah. I'm just going to waste all of my bullets shooting at nothing. I have an important question while we're on Madeline still. Madeline and Florence, I guess. What do you think... she whispered in her ear in that super important pivotal slow-mo scene that we get no insight into or information about, and yet we spent, you know, like a solid 30 seconds watching Florence lean in and whisper in her ear and Madeline smiles. What did she say? What do we think?
Man, I just Googled it, and apparently, like, the actors kind of made up something amongst themselves. I honestly don't know. Like, it's super random. And, like, you know, I feel like everything else in this movie, it's kind of style over substance. It's just, like, they want to have a placeholder thing there that they can be, like, you know, something really meaningful happened, but we don't need to know what it is because we're just going on to
but
the next
action
scene.
But that's why I think, like, let's headcanon it. In your version, what does she whisper? Do you have a thought, Ellie? What would she whisper in her ear if you were writing the movie?
I feel like she just says, don't forget the machine gun. No, I was like, I mean, the most obvious thing is just like, I love you, whatever, but...
I love that you're going so sweet with it, and like, what does it tell you? Because I made Kelsey watch this with me. Kelsey leans over to me and she was like, so what does she whisper in her ear? Like, think of all the sex we'll have after this.
Oh my God. I also just
gonna slaughter some men and then
I also just like to think
right
of like
bed.
All these men in the editing room who are like, oh, what a tasteful, beautiful lesbian moment. Look, we did it. We did it, men. We did it.
They have the We Did It banner behind yeah, them. Mission accomplished.
Look at, we gave the gays what they want.
In a yeah. movie where nobody ever is canonically confirmed as gay. Yeah, that would be peak way to do it.
There's an article on Den of Geek where they talked to the director who also co-wrote the script and asked him about the whisper and asked him about like the queer subtext in the movie. And he said, there are deeper, more valuable connections that we wanted to portray in a very, very subtle way. We wanted
Ew.
To create this rich history between the characters. The moment you see them, you understand it goes deeper and longer, and that their emotions have been bottled up for so many years. And he says that, you know, there was definitely something going on with Anime and Scarlett, and they weren't trying to avoid this, and they have great chemistry, but only the actors know what Florence is whispering to Madeline in this moment. The producers wanted me to tell them, but no one else knows. So the actors just had to come up in their own mind with, I think, yeah, there was something like, I'm going to bring the baby oil, you know, I've got I don't even know.
Yes, please come up with something to take my mind off of that quote you just read, because I'm throwing up in my mouth right now a little bit.
Man.
At like how dismissive and somehow strangely phallic imagery can we get in a quote? Like,
let's just talk generally about subtlety. I mean, this entire freaking segment, right, Should Have Been Gay, is about all the subtext that people have been throwing at us for years. Mm-hmm. For years, okay? We've done episodes on shows from the 1950s. We've done episodes on, like, things all the way up till now. It is, in 2021, I don't want to see subtle queer characters. And subtle queer characters are not queer characters who hold hands once. If you want to write me a subtle queer character, give me Florence and fucking Madeline kissing goodbye. It doesn't have mm-hmm. to be like, let's, like, you know what I mean? Or like, give me a flashback scene with Anime and Scarlet, right? Where like Scarlet leaves in the night and Anime's naked in bed. Give me that. That's like,
that's
subtle
gay. What we have is subtle nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Like nothing.
What you have are gay characters that you refuse to explicitly make gay, even in a subtle way, while also talking about the deeper, longer, more important connections that people can have with each other. Sir, please. Please. Listen.
Yeah, I'm sorry I found that quote now. I feel like it's just, anyway.
Oh, I'm so glad you found it, because now I feel so justified in my anger at this film.
Yeah, it's actually interesting, because they really kind of asked him about the queer subtext, and he kind of dodged on it in a sad way. I was going to say, my favorite subtext moment is when we first kind of, like, when Sam first shows up at the library, and they're, like, asking her what type she is. And I feel like that's so loaded with so much, like, oh, I think they, like, it's almost like they're asking her, you know, I mean, what type she is, like, what, you
Listen,
know, what she's into,
who she's
into. Listen,
just tell us if you're a sports gay, like, Madeline could use a cottagecore friend, we're both clearly on the masks side of the spectrum, like, do you like to hang shelves, do you make your own furniture, just give mm-hmm. us something to go on here, you know?
They're, like, looking at her guns, which are, you know, that's obviously a very loaded, quote-unquote, no fun intended, it's a very loaded image. They're looking at her guns being like, oh, you took good care of these guns, you're romantic. And then she's like, oh no, I'm not a type. And they're like, everybody has a type, honey. And they're just like, you know, they're just trying to figure out what type she is so they could set her up with one of their cute lady friends. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
look,
it's,
everybody
yeah.
has a type. Let us dig through your I Heart Kittens bag and just find out, like, what kind of equipment you like to strap on, and let's just talk about it a bit, okay? Just what every good aunt should do.
I was gonna go a little less explicit and just say, you know, it's like astrology gaze, where they're like, what's your sign and like who's compatible with you. But yeah, agreed. The strap on analogy also works, Lee.
You're welcome. Happy to
and
help.
Again, they're like handling her like very phallic objects that, you know, in these movies, they're always, guns are always kind of a stand in for, you know, for the phallus, I guess. And they're talking about like how romantic her handling them is and how what they can tell about her type from them. So make of that what you will.
If the director's gonna talk about deeper and longer, I think he opened that door and we are allowed to walk through it. That's all I know, okay?
Well, she also, like, she has not gotten new weapons in 15 years, right? Maybe not 15 years, but this is...
She likes a classic.
This is the first time she's ever gotten a new weapon. Like, that's, like, that was the point of it, right? Like, he was like, you have to give in your old toys that you, like, have literally held on to for, like, 10 years. Wait, also, how old is Sam?
That's a good question. She's got to be like later 20s, maybe.
Yeah,
to me, she looks like she's supposed to be like 10-ish in the 15-year back flashback, right?
I was pegging her as 12-ish in the 15 years ago flashback. So she's like late 20s. They, you know, they give Lena Headey this like line where she says, "I was very young when I had you," just so that we know that she's, you know, just so that, yeah, just to make it clear that Lena's also kind of still young.
I'm going to guess late 20s, like 30 max. I mean, they're not playing mm-hmm. her as more than maybe tweens in that flashback, so.
Yeah, I was also.
I would have said 12.
Yeah. I was confused in the flashback, but I feel like I cannot tell anyone's age anymore, but I was like, why is this 17-year-old like holding a teddy bear?
Like holding it, yeah. She has a little stuffed tiger or something.
But that
yeah.
makes more sense. It makes way more sense.
Oh Lord. Okay, should we do our ships, Ellie, before we
Yes, yes.
Or before we just rip this movie apart anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. is there any other gay things that you wanted to talk about, Charlie, before we go into our ships? Any like gay moments you noticed, or gay things we could have had that didn't happen?
I mean, you know, there's the dudes. There's all the dudes who seem very like, you know, they have a very kind of like tight relationship. All of these dudes who like to go around together, especially those three dudes who like are like a set, and they just like hang out together and like probably go to like, you know, hot tubbing together, I'm guessing, when they're not like trying to kill people. I don't know. They definitely had a vibe.
They had a very intimate friendship. Some of these other,
I feel like there's just like a ton of dudes in this movie who all kind of look the same and are, you know, they all shop at like Abercrombie and Fitch or whatever, and they're all yeah. like kind of hanging out at like, you know, Toad Hall and like drinking the 2-for-1 drink specials and watching Queer Eye and just like waiting for the call to go kill someone. I don't know. They probably have their own library, like a dude library where it's like all.
Oh, I
they have a man cave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could definitely yep. see that. I also want to give just like an honorable mention to Rose from the diner.
Yes. Oh my God.
Also, just I'm not gonna give that much context of it. Just same thing. Vibe. Just got a vibe.
Vibe. Give us more of Rose and the bisexual diner.
That's
yeah.
it.
I want more of that
That's
story.
It. All right. So, what characters are we shipping? We've talked a little bit about this. I'm gonna say obviously I am hardcore shipping Anime and Scarlet. Like, those two need to get over their beef and just get back together.
Okay, and what's the name, Ellie? Hit me.
Oh, God.
Hit us. Do it.
Scarme.
Yeah.
It's actually not a bad name.
And Annalette. There's not a lot.
I'm going to get on the Florence Madeline bandwagon and just maybe the ship name is Flormad. And, like, my theory is that, you know, Madeline faked her death. She's actually fine. She's knitting. She's, like, you know, knitting a gun cozy somewhere, and she'll be back in the next movie, and she and Florence will be just like, you know, make it out in the back row or whatever of the bus.
I'm here for
yes.
that.
Yes. Look, I also have to honorable mention my poly quad, and I'm gonna call them Scarbarians.
Ooh, Scarbarians.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it.
I'm pretty sure they did say that Scarlet was also a librarian.
Mm-hmm. At the end. They did. I think she was one of the she was really originally one of them, and then she just ghosted them.
So rude. But
I shipped them all.
So we think Scarlet was a librarian, and then her oh yeah, because she said she knew them from work, which means she worked with them.
Well, from her husband's work.
And her husband probably too. Worked at the firm.
Because
he was murdered.
It's, again, very
literally
unclear.
We'll never know.
Literally, who knows? He seems to matter 0%, which feels right for her relationship with the librarian.
Yes. But I feel like we can all agree we want a librarian prequel with just the librarians, Scarlet, and Sam as a baby. And, like, don't give us anything else. I don't want a sequel if it's not a prequel.
I mostly just want Michelle Yeoh doing gay stuff, I'll be honest. Like, and you know, I kept thinking about the Heroic Trio, which was that amazing. Have you seen Heroic Trio?
Mm-mm.
So, Heroic Trio, if you ever want to see Michelle Yeoh being awesome, it's a Hong Kong film from like 1993 in which she and Anita Mui and Maggie Cheung are three superhero ladies who team up to fight crime wearing like little, like kind of wearing like leather pants, I think, and little masks. And like,
I'm adding it to our should have been gay list right now.
I mean, if you want to see Michelle Yeoh and awesome ladies, like just teaming up
yes.
to like kick everybody's butts, that is a great movie. And I feel like it's 1993, it's Hong Kong. I don't know how, I haven't seen it in a million years. I don't remember how on the surface the lesbian suspect subtext in that movie is, but I think that you would find it very interesting. And honestly, Michelle Yeoh just deserves so much better. Like,
yes,
she always deserves better.
Agreed. And we can find the lesbian Amazing. Subtext in anything, so don't worry. But we all can agree that Gunpowder Milkshake should have been gay.
Should have been gay.
It really should have. Yes, we're going to go into our Q and gay. Are you ready, Charlie?
I am so ready.
Q and gay.
All right, here we go. Our first question. What's your favorite type of milkshake? A, vanilla, B, chocolate, C, strawberry, or D, swirl?
Ooh, I'm going to go with swirl because that sounds kind of exciting. It sounds very vaguely, you know, I'm going to go with swirl.
I love it. You're like, it's so fluid.
Best of all worlds.
It's so deep. I'm like, that's just our first question,
it's
Charlie.
So
still talking for 15
so
minutes.
Long.
Like, so swirl because I'm part this and part that and you mix it together. And no, I love it though. I love it.
It's, I mean, you know, swirl, it's probably, it's the most bisexual milkshake.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yes.
Yes,
I'm for it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Question two, who is the gayest librarian? A, Scarlet, B, Florence, C, Madeline, or D, Anime?
Oh, Anime. No question.
Yes.
God.
Correct
the
answer.
The suits.
Hello. I want that suit, man. I want that outfit. She looked dope. I love it.
Question number three, would you forgive the woman who killed your father? A, yes, B, no, or C, if it was Sam?
Man, if it was Sam, if she like apologized really nicely and like, you know, maybe gave me a milkshake or something, I can't be bad at Karen Gillan. You know,
yep.
I just can't.
It's hard to do it. Question four. This is a tough one. What's the best fight scene in Gunpowder Milkshake? A, the bowling alley, B, the hospital, C, the library, or D, the diner?
Oh, I'm definitely going to go with the hospital. I actually, you know what? I thought that the fight scenes were well done. I liked the fight scenes. I felt like at a certain point, like by the final one by the library fight scene, I was starting to kind of check out a little bit because it just felt like it was kind of getting repetitive. But I really loved, I feel like the thing where she can't use her arms is really fun. And it reminded me of the underrated Jackie Chan movie, The Tuxedo, where he has like a magic suit, but at one point he's only wearing the pants. So he can only fight with his legs and not his arms. So I don't know. I'm going to say that the hospital, that was actually a genuinely inventive, fun fight scene.
The hospital scene.
It
was
fun.
Good,
I agree. I think their fight scenes were fun. I think the library, I wish they had just, I feel like if you had shown us more of the library itself, like mm-hmm. shown us the dioramas to start, shown us some of the books and the stuff that's hiding in them. Like, I feel like you could have made it so much more engaging, you know,
true.
Than they did.
Really
Instead,
true.
It did. It started kind of to drag because you're just like, but I don't know any of these things that are happening. I guess they're just going to like go and find weapons everywhere. Okay.
Or gold bars.
Right,
but yeah, the hospital scene was inventive for sure. All right. Question number five, and I'll add another one for you, Lee. Who's your favorite librarian couple? A, Anime and Scarlet, B, Florence and Madeline, or C, all of the above?
I just got to go with all of the above. I mean, I'm increasingly buying into the sort of polyquad theory that Lee was advancing. I think that they were just all, you know, they were all kind of shacking up together, and maybe Scarlet's quote-unquote husband was just like, you know, he just was there to kind of go out and get them milk at the grocery store or whatever. I don't know. He was like,
wait, sorry,
he was there.
I just had a really important thought, which is, because I don't remember, but did she ever even actually call him her husband? She calls him Sam's father. She talks about Sam's father.
Right. I don't remember.
Right? Do they even clarify that relationship? Like, he could have just been like, oh, here's my also very gay best friend who was a donor so that we could have a baby. They don't even say. So
they don't.
You know?
We'll never know.
Sperm donor.
Because they'll never they'll never expand on anything in this universe.
I know.
They just wanted the entire universe to be subtle. They want us to make up our own answers for everything.
Our own deeper and longer answers. Yeah. That's all. And that's what we've done here. We've succeeded. Mission accomplished. We did it.
Charlie, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me. This was such a blast. And, you know, I feel like this is the best way that I can honor that film is to like discuss it with both of you and to really, you know, tease out all of the gayness that was kind of, you know, I don't want to say buried, but that was buried in that film.
Yeah, for sure.
The gays were buried in that movie. Yeah, the gays were more really ways buried. Than one. Tell our listeners where they can find you, where they can find all of your books, all of your stuff. Where can they go?
Yeah, I'm Charlie Jane on Twitter, just like one word. My website is charliejane.com. And on Instagram, I'm Charlie Jane Anders.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you. I had such fun. Thank you. Thank you guys so much. This was lovely.
Let me hear you say hip, hip, hip.
We love hearing from you and building community, so we want to shout out some of our favorite things each episode. And we would like to shout out Tomary Stoltz, who reached out to us on Instagram with a should have been gay suggestion for any movie featuring Devon Sawa in the 90s. Now and Then, Little Giants, Casper, that classic tomboy lesbian. We have done Now and Then, Tomary, if you haven't gotten there, listen to that one. But we can agree we love a 90s tomboy vibe.
They are ripe with material for should have been gays every time. We also want to shout out a fun recent response to some of our cute and gays from our first episode of season 5 from one of our favorite potatoes, Ello, who let us know that she has written already two things, a magical fantasy book that I'm very excited to read, and that also they're working on a Christmas romance book, which just inject it straight into my veins, please, and thank you. That's all I have to say. So, Ella, we're excited. We want, you know, like the advance release copies whenever they're ready. Please. Yeah, thanks.
Yes, and keep creating things, all of you, and let us know when you're creating them and send them our way because it's so cool. As always, we want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons, Mark Foster,
Jess Klaus,
Tanya Ferguson,
Jacqueline Rose Nishino,
Saren Julia,
Carrie Ann Lawrence,
Danny Gunlock Tamora,
Brittany Ray,
Alana Rosen,
Lizette Stye,
Stacy,
Adi Benitez,
Fiona W.,
and our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Leah Henley,
Liz Chen,
and Julia Gonzalez.
Thank you all so much. As always, we could not keep doing this podcast without you. Our patrons are just the best.
Remember, you can also find us on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Les Hangout Pod.
You can email us at leshangoutpod@gmail.com.
Or check out our website at leshangoutpod.com.
Whatever app you use to listen to podcasts, make sure that you subscribe. That way you'll get new episodes as soon as they go up every week.
Also, make sure you subscribe to The Flame on all your podcasting apps. If you haven't listened to it, you can listen to it for the first time. And if you have listened to it, we know you've listened to it many, many times. So keep listening.
We also are going to have videos going up on our YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/leshangoutpod to catch those.
If you want to support the podcast, the cheapest way to do that is to rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps other people find the podcast.
If you want to support us financially, you can join our Patreon at bit.ly/lespatreon. It helps us make the podcast. It's going to help us actually pay Ellie and Kristen for all of the time that they're spending doing Yippee. All the cool things, like editing the podcast and getting us guests and stuff. And you get some cool perks like ad-free episodes and access to our super cool exclusive Discord channel and all sorts of fun stuff that we do in there. So I'm just saying, check it out. That's all I'm saying.
If you want to help support The Flame as well, you can join our Flame Patreon at bit.ly/TheFlamePatreon. That will help us bring The Flame to the stage and also make an entirely new musical for next season, which is going to be very exciting.
If you want to find our merch, we have merch and all of our designs for both Les Hangout and The Flame that you can find on our TeePublic. We have all sorts of designs and you can get them on t-shirts, on tank tops, on sweatshirts, on totes, on all sorts of cool stuff. You can find it at bit.ly/lesshop.
If you want to find us individually, you can find me at Ellie Brigida on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee.
And let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out.